And now for reading and writing and radio.
It's cold and it's February, but we're thinking ahead to the April 17th Jamboree. Many of you listeners visited Sangamon State last year for a day or two of fun and festivities, and we're planning another one this year. We're calling every teacher to see if your class is coming and how many of you so that we can plan your activities and match you up with your pen pal class if you have one, and be sure to order enough classy Jamboree pencils for each of you, and have enough helium balloons for each class to have one for the great helium balloon send-off. And you participating teachers will soon get a packet with all details. Today I'm being a roving reporter. I'm going to wander the hallways of Sangamon State and see if I can find any of our faculty and staff who were part of the Jamboree last year and hear what last year's kids did in some of the sessions that they had. Well, I just ran into Nancy Hunt in the hall, and she is our archivist. And so we're here in Nancy's office, and she's going to tell you in a couple of minutes some of the things that the kids do when they visit the archives on Jamboree Day.
An archives is a place where we keep historical records, and we keep historical records from 14 counties locally, as well as university records and other materials. So when you come to the archives, you'll get to see and handle different records dating mostly from the 19th century, so before in the 1900s and the 1800s. And we have old school records, old attendance records, election papers. You can see Lincoln voting in New Salem in the 1830s, and old photographs. And we'll talk about family history and how you might be able to trace your own family history using our material.
You told me something exciting just happened to you. Will you tell us what that is?
Yeah. Yesterday we had a sixth grader come in. It was Lincoln's birthday yesterday, so she was here in the library with her mother, and she had nothing to do, and so she wandered down to the archives, and she was from Menard County, and she wanted to know what we had that might be related to her family history. So we looked at the list of possible records, and she said she wanted to look at the militia rolls from 1863, so we pulled out the volume of militia rolls, and she sat down with it with a pencil and a piece of paper and went over the list and found all kinds of names of people who had the same last name as her parents and her grandparents. So that's
tell us what a militia roll is, because some kids may not know.
This militia roll was from the Civil War, and it was a list of soldiers. I believe that the function of the record was to sign people up, to keep track of who was serving in the military and who wasn't. So this was the people who registered at a given time.
And why was having the sixth grader come in such an exciting event for you? I mean, aren't sixth graders a dime a dozen?
It's rare that we have people who come in of that age to look at their family history. Most people who look at their family history probably are in their 50s and 60s. Most of them are retired, and it becomes a hobby at that point to have a young girl of, what is sixth grade, 12 years old perhaps, mm-hmm. Does that make it? Looking for that kind of material. It's nice that she had that kind of curiosity and that she somehow knew that this was a place where she could trace her history.
And would you welcome other students to come in,
sure,
of other ages, even if they're not on Jamboree Day, if they find their way here?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. One of the things that I recall that the kids especially liked seeing was in the school records the kind of supplies that the schools had when the checkers came around to see how well the schools were doing and to list the list of how few things there were in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one that we have, what's called a supervisor's report, and these are records from Scott County where the local supervisor would go around and see what the different classrooms were like. So he commented on whether a classroom had a globe or whether they had a dictionary, and he also made his subjective comments about how well the teacher was teaching and how well the students were behaving. And so you get a real sense of a one-room schoolhouse in the, I think those records are from the 1880s, in Scott County.
And what some reading and writing and radio students may not know is that all of your writings have been going into the archives. And so 100 years from now, somebody can come in and say, I'd like to see what the kids talked about when they talked with their congressman a couple of weeks, they wouldn't be saying a couple of weeks ago, they would be saying 100 years and a couple of weeks ago. And then they'll be able to find your paper. Well, thank you, Nancy, and I'm sure that you will have a good group visiting the archives again.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I'm over here in K Building now, where the biology lab and the chemistry labs are, and I'm here with Gary Trammell, and for several years now, Gary has had Jamboree kids come into the chemistry lab. He calls it Chemistry in Action, and when a group comes this year, Gary, what might they expect to have happen in the chemistry lab with them?
Basically, what I try to do is work with some students, and we show some experiments that are colorful and fascinating to look at chemical phenomena. That chemists view the world as made up of matter, and we look at the changes that matter undergoes. We'll be seeing examples of reactions that undergo nice color changes. We'll see some chemiluminescence reactions where we
mix. What?
Chemiluminescence reactions.
Chemiluminescence?
Right. It's the kind of chemistry that takes place in lightning bugs, that when lightning bugs glow at night and flicker, that basically chemicals react and they give off energy in the form of light.
Uh-huh.
We'll be seeing some examples of that here. We'll be looking at some reactions that take place under conditions of very cold using dry ice, liquid air materials, and seeing how gases behave in balloons, what happens when you cool down a balloon to very low temperatures, and see if it still floats or not. We'll be looking at ways that you can crush a soda can using the pressure of the atmosphere. And basically,
with or without the soda in it?
Without.
Without the soda in it.
You can recycle your soda can then.
Uh-huh.
But we'll be looking at a number of the kind of things that chemists study to show why we're excited about chemistry and why we think it's a fascinating subject to study.
Let me ask you about a chemoluminescence that may or may not be something like that. Did you know that when you take a wintergreen lifesaver and in the dark and crush it in your back teeth, it makes a light? Is that a chemoluminescent reaction?
Okay, that's a luminescent reaction. It's called triboluminescence, and basically their mechanical energy is converted to light energy. It's because the sugar molecules break apart and you can then see the flash of light.
So that's what causes it. Will it happen with other than a wintergreen lifesaver? Could it happen with a sugar cube then?
I'm not sure. It'd be something that someone out there could try. That one of the things that we do in order to save your teeth and prevent cavities, you can do this a little cleaner by putting a lifesaver in a plastic sandwich bag, taking a pair of pliers and crushing it in a dark room, and then you can avoid the mess, and your parents are less likely to complain about that.
But you see the little flash of, well, it was a green light with a wintergreen.
Yeah, it was a green light, and it would be worth trying that on other kinds of lifesavers, see if the sugar-free ones work as well as the sugar lifesavers.
That would be a real experiment then.
That's right.
To see what is necessary for triboluminescence.
And that's one of the things we'd like to do is to get people stimulated in chemistry, and then there are many of these things that are simple to do in your home that you can start conducting your own little experiments safely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think any class that gets to come into the chemistry lab is going to be a lucky class. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Well, all this interviewing is getting to be a bit taxing, and here I am by Building B, by the accounting section of the university, and I think I know just what I need. I need a Lindsay lift. Every year at the Jamboree, we've had Marion Levin, who's been giving Lindsay lifts, and she works here in accounting. Let's see if she'll give me a Lindsay lift. Marion! Marion! Marion!
Can't you see that I am giving here?
I need a Lindsay lift. I've got to have
Lindsay
a Lindsay lift. Yes.
Well, just let me see. I have to conjure in my name. Now, which one would you like?
Oh, how about starting with the little turtle? I always like the little turtle.
Oh, yes. There was a little turtle who lived in a box. He swam in the puddles and he climbed on the rocks. He snapped at a mosquito. He snapped at a flea. He snapped at a minnow. And he snapped at me. He caught the mosquito. He caught the flea. He caught the minnow. But he
didn't catch
me.
Thank you. Got another one there for me?
Well, let's see. How about I saw a proud, mysterious cat. I saw a proud, mysterious cat. Too proud to catch a mouse or rat.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Well, give me one more verse, and then I'll go. But first, tell me, are you going to be at the Jamboree this year, giving all these kids that are coming a Lindsay lift?
I don't know.
You're going to try, aren't you?
I'm going to try, and if my limbs will stay together, I'll be there.
All right. Give us one more verse of the prod.
But catnip she did eat and purr, and goldfish she did much prefer. Pew!
Thank you for that, Lindsay Lift. Well, fortified by that Lindsay Lift, I came all the way across campus to the building of the Public Affairs Building, and I managed to catch Roy Worley right outside his office. And he's going to tell us a little something about what he's done with kids in previous years when they come to Through the Environment with Dr. Seuss. And this is something that I don't know anything about either, because one of the difficulties of being in charge of the whole affair is that I don't get into the various sessions. So I've been wanting to hear from Roy what he does, too. Are you ready, Roy?
I guess so. What I do, Jackie, is I decorate the room up a little bit and draw some sniffle trees and all of the different things that Dr. Seuss kind of used in terms of the story of the Thneeds that he has.
The Thneeds,
and that's Thneeds,
which
is a tricky one to throw out. And then I dress up as some kind of a funny-looking character, and I tell the children the story of the Lorax, which is a famous Dr. Seuss story, which tells about the time in which there was a people that were entranced by all the trees, and they cut them all down. And the story builds up to what happens after they cut them all down, and all the bubbling fish and the different kinds of humming birds all leave, and it's a quite a sad story. And it's so interesting because the children become so involved in it that they almost cry as the last animal departs and leaves when the area's been all destroyed. And then, of course, at the end, there's a story of one seed that's left from the Thneed trees. And I go around and I ask him, who wants this last seed? And generally, when I have it in my hand, of course, I have nothing in my hand. And they get very expectant. The children squiggle, and they all come up, and it's wonderful. But once in a while, about once out of every four or five classes, a child will look and say, but there's nothing there. But generally, they will take it, and they will treasure it, and they will take it, and I say, now you're going to plant this seed. And in the way of doing it, we talk a lot about nature and about how we want to take care of it and how the Lorax, which is an imaginary creature which tells the story, we can see him out in the woods and we can talk to him. And I talk about how that he is out there and he wants you to take care of the trees and everything. And then the children promise that they will do that at the end. And I don't have to encourage them all. The story just does that by itself. So it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they get really involved in the thing, and they watch for when the Lorax is coming and when the humming fish are going to leave and all that sort of thing. So it's a lot of fun.
Then most of the kids understand the symbolic nature of that there's nothing in your hand, but there's really something, which is the whole responsibility is what you give them,
exactly
that we've
right.
got to take care of these things and
that's
keep
right.
them going.
That's exactly right. And most of them get it 100%. Even though they're very young, they get it right away. I think they get it better than us older ones, as a matter of fact.
Well, I have a summer place in Vermont where this is literally happening because we're right up close to Camel's Hump, which is being studied for acid rain.
I know.
And
that
particular mountain is the one that's had the most studies being done on it, and the trees are dying there. And
brown,
we're going to have to do something. It's happening, you know, not just in Vermont, but all over. And so we have environmental problems, not only with trees, but with groundwater and with air pollution. And these are all the sorts of things that we have to turn our energies and our...
That's right.
Our
I think we can help the children to understand this when they're young, or it'll make a different world tomorrow. That's what I really believe.
Well, I certainly appreciate your taking classes, and maybe this year I can get in and participate too.
You can be Mrs. Lorax.
All right. Thank you, Roy.
You're welcome, Jackie.
And now, here I am with Charlie Schweighauser, who is our Sangamon State University astronomer, who is just back from watching Voyager go past Uranus, with all the excitement with the new moons and things like that. And we want to ask Charlie, as our final person to interview, What do you kids do when you come to visit the observatory in the daytime?
Well, we take the everybody up the stairs to the observatory. Of course, the stairs have lots of exhibits in them, and we're going to be talking about some of those exhibits. This includes an exhibit on the sun. We'll be talking about Halley's Comet, too, which has been in the news quite a bit in the last few weeks and few months, and talk a little bit about Halley's Comet. When we get up on the observation deck, I take the students into the observatory. I show them the telescope, and then if it's clear, why, we'll be looking at the sun through a special filter, so we protect everybody's eyes, and if there's some sunspots there, why, we'll show everybody some sunspots.
Think there's going to be any sunspots around the 17th of April?
Well, we can't predict that very precisely. Unfortunately, we're in a period that's known as a sunspot minimum right now. Every 11 years, the sun goes through a cycle where it has a maximum of sunspots, and we're halfway in between cycles right now, so there are just a few sunspots there, but maybe we'll get lucky and there'll be a lot of sunspots on the 17th of April.
And what if it turns out to be pouring rain on the 17th of April?
Well, if it turns out to be pouring rain, we'll take everybody to the Brookings Auditorium and talk about the solar system with the use of slides. So when people come out here, they'll have the opportunity to do something in astronomy, whether it's raining or not.
Thank you, Charlie, and I know that the kids that have been there before have loved it and that everybody wants to go to the observatory. So, thanks so much. Well, that's enough interviews, isn't it, to give you an idea of what an outing the Jamboree is? I'm walking back to WSSR now, can you hear the wind blow? To give this tape to Jeannie to put on reel to reel, so it'll be all ready for you guys on Monday. And on the way, I'll mention this week's writing topic, because we haven't talked about that yet, have we? Oh, what's that? Is that Sandy running across the campus to see me? No, it's Snoopy. It's Snoopy. Snoopy, what are you doing here? I haven't seen you since year before last at the Jamboree. How come you stood us up last year? Oh, you didn't mean to? It was that cat next door that wouldn't let you out of your doghouse? Well, are you going to be here this year? Yep. Well, we're glad to hear that. Are you going to bring writing advice for everybody on those sheets like you've done before? Yep. Okay, well, we'll look forward to seeing you there then. And I was just telling our listeners about the writing topic for this week, which I think ought to be outings, because not everybody's been to the Jamboree, but everybody has been on an outing. A school outing, or a family outing, or a church outing, or woof. Oh, you went on a bird watching outing with Woodstock the other day at Lincoln Gardens, and you saw lots of birds? Well, that must have been nice. Woof. And the week before, you went to the Alpo factory and saw how they make dog food, and you all got treats? Well, that must have been fun, too. So, why don't we ask our listeners to write about the outings that they've been on? Snoopy says his advice to you is to be specific. Yes, that's right. To give us the details of what made it an interesting outing, or a butt, or a bust. Whatever the stories are that went into the outing, right? Snoopy says that's right. He's wagging his tail. And Snoopy, what do you think about a good beginning? Snoopy says, it was a dark and stormy night is always a good beginning. Well, here we are at the studio, Snoopy, and thank you for coming and seeing me, and we'll see you April 17th.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.